Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Michael. I'm reading additional articles from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American newspapers from Saturday, July 16th through Monday, July 18th. From the Midland Reporter-Telegram inside pages, July 16th. Odessa father's charges upgraded to capital murder in infant's death by Mercedes Cordero. An Odessa father is now being charged with capital murder in the death of his seven-month-old son, according to an Odessa police department on Facebook. Cameron Gamridge, 23, was originally charged with injury to a child, elderly individual, or disabled individual, causing serious bodily injury, a first-degree felony. Odessa police were dispatched Tuesday at about 12:52 p.m. to 4221 East 52nd Street in reference to a medical call. Dispatch advised that an infant inside the apartment was unresponsive and not breathing. Upon arrival, officers observed that the deceased infant had heavy bruising, swelling to the left side of his face and head, and multiple smaller bruises along the top of the infant's cranium, according to the arrest affidavit. Gamage and Layla Pearson, 18, were identified as the infant's parents. Pearson told officers she fed the infant Tuesday around 5 a.m. and went back to sleep. When she woke up around 12 p.m., she noticed the infant was not breathing and woke Gamage, according to the arrest affidavit. Gamage reportedly called 911 and started CPR per the dispatcher's instructions, according to the arrest affidavit. When asked about the bruises on the infant's head, Gamage stated the infant hit his head on a hard portion of the interior of the crib, according to the affidavit. The couple told officers they smoked marijuana on July 9th around 10 p.m. and took a nap. The infant started crying and Gamage went to the bedroom to play with the infant. He then began tossing the infant in the air and catching him. Gamage told officers the infant would not stop crying and he was frustrated. He told officers he accidentally dropped the infant after about the fourth toss. The infant hit the floor hard and landed on his left side, according to the arrest affidavit. The bruising and swelling to his face and head began after that, according to the arrest affidavit. Pearson told officers after she woke up from the nap on July 9th, she went to check on the infant and saw the bruising. When she asked Gamage about it, she stated it was probably from the infant hitting his head on the hard part of the crib, according to the arrest affidavit. Pearson stated the infant became more fussy over the next couple of days, but she thought it was because he was teething, according to the arrest affidavit. Pearson was charged with injury to a child, elderly individual, or disabled individual, criminal negligence, a state jail felony. Man gets 14 years for Ponzi scheme by Mercedes Cordero. A Keller businessman and owner of a Midland-based propane company was sentenced Thursday to 14 years in prison and ordered to pay over $14 million in restitution for operating a Ponzi scheme. Marco Perez Jr., 37, used his company, Permian Basin Propants Incorporated, between 2017 and 2022 to perpetuate a Ponzi scheme by soliciting investor money based on misrepresentations, according to a press release from the United States Attorney's Office, Western District of Texas. During this time, Perez, also known as Sully Perez, received more than $14 million from the scheme. He used most of the funds for his own benefit, buying property, vacations, a lavish wedding, and luxury vehicles, including a Lamborghini, a Rolls Royce, a BMW, and a Cadillac Escalade. Perez also purchased a helicopter, according to a press release. Perez pled guilty on April 13th to one count of wire fraud and one count of engaging in monetary transactions in property derived from specified unlawful activities. Rig Report. Uncertainty could disrupt basin's steady count by Mella McEwen. U.S. drillers put more rigs to work for a second consecutive week, but uncertainty over commodity prices may deter some from ramping up activity. Baker Hughes said Friday its U.S. rig count, which it has issued weekly since the 1940s, rose by four to 756. That's the highest since March 2020. just as the COVID-19 pandemic began to take hold of global economies. It's also 272 rigs, or 56%, higher than the 484 the oil field services firm reported last year. There were 599 rigs drilling for crude, up 2 for the week, and up 219 from 380 last year. The number of rigs seeking natural gas was unchanged at 153, 49 more than the 104 at work last July. Texas added 4 rigs during the week for 365 at work statewide, 143 more than the 222 counted last year. New Mexico dropped 2 rigs for 110. California 1, North Dakota 1, and Oklahoma 3 joined Texas as producing states to see an increase in rig activity, while Louisiana 3 joined New Mexico in seeing a decline. The Permian Basin held steady at 350 rigs for the week, 112 more than 238 at work in the basin a year ago. Lee County, New Mexico, remained the most active county in the Permian with 55 rigs, down 1 for the week. Eddy County, New Mexico, followed with 52 rigs, also down 1 for the week. Midland County lost rigs for a second week, falling 1 to 38. Martin County added 1 rig for 31. Loving and Reeves counties each reported 27 rigs for the week, up 1 for Loving and unchanged for Reeves. Howard County reported 24 rigs at work within county lines for a 5th consecutive week. Upton County added a rig for 13 this week, and Ward County added 1 rig for 11. Andrews, Glasscock, and Reagan counties each had 10 rigs at work this week, unchanged for Andrews and Reagan counties, and up 1 for Glasscock. Enverus Foundations, part of the software as a service firm Enverus, said its U.S. rig count rose by 5 in the last week to 826 as of July 13th. The foundation said its count is up 2% in the last month and up 56% year over year. The count reached as high as 836 in the last week, an increase of 4 rigs over the prior week's peak. The Gulf Coast added the most rigs on a peak-to-peak basis in the last week, with 4 more rigs bringing its total to a 2022 high of 118. The last week's DJ and Permian peaks of 22 and 309 were each up by 2 from the previous week's high points. The DJ hit a 2022 high, while the Permian is 7 rigs off its year-to-date high recorded May 22nd, and is the only basin that hasn't notched a new high in July. 3 basins had declines in their peak rig counts last week compared to the prior week. The Appalachian dropped by 4 to 56 rigs, the Williston was down by 3 to 42, and the Anadarko was down by 2 to 73. From the inside pages of the Odessa American, Saturday, July 16th. 18 arrested after Jaguars raid. 18 people were arrested on a misdemeanor charge Sunday night after tips led police to discover Jaguars nightclub was operating as a sexually oriented business despite allowing its business permit to lapse back in April. According to an Odessa Police Department news release, the management at Jaguars had been notified multiple times in writing over the last 2 years what they had to do to maintain a business license under the city of Odessa's sexually oriented business ordinance. Attorneys for the business, which is located on Cargo Road, informed city officials they were no longer a sexually oriented business and were instead operating as a bikini bar, the release stated. OPD received tips that Jaguars was still operating as an SOB, and when undercover officers went into the bar, they observed numerous entertainers and non-entertainers engaged in conduct that requires a sexually oriented business license. The 18 people were charged with violating Odessa City Ordinance Sections 4 and 5 Sexually Oriented Business License Requirements, a Class A misdemeanor punishable by up to 1 year in jail and or a $1,000 fine. The cases were referred to the Ector County District Attorney's Office for review. Local News Roundup. Dixie Project Detour to begin Tuesday. There will be a change to the traffic patterns beginning Tuesday for the Dixie Project between 44th Street and 52nd Street, a City of Odessa press release stated. Southbound traffic will be detoured to McKnight Drive. A message board will be placed at this location beginning Friday to provide notice to motorists of the upcoming detour. During this phase of construction, there will be only one lane of northbound traffic open to motorists. Cooling center moving to Salvation Army. Due to low demand, the City of Odessa's cooling center, located at Woodson Park, will close and an alternate cooling center will be available at the Salvation Army. The Salvation Army is located at 810 East 11th Street. The contact number for the Salvation Army is 432-332-0738. For those with COVID concerns, if you have compromised immunity or live with someone who does, we encourage you to wear a mask and maintain social distance. IDEA Permian Basin offering signing bonus for selected positions. IDEA Permian Basin is looking for qualified candidates to fill immediate positions in several departments at IDEA Travis, Midland, and IDEA Yukon, Odessa. Select teacher, special education teacher, and bus driver positions are open. Sign-on bonuses of $2,500 will be offered to applicants selected for special education teachers, along with additional annual stipends. We are looking for effective educators to help our students grow, not just in the classroom, but in life, Bethany Solis, Executive Director of IDEA Permian Basin, said in a news release. At IDEA, we are committed to getting every student to and through college, and everyone on our staff plays a fundamental role in achieving this goal. Applicants for special education teacher positions must be certified. Candidates for special education co-teacher positions do not need to be certified, but it is preferred applicants to have at least 2 years of experience working with children. As a new hire for IDEA Permian Basin, employees will attend the new Teacher Institute program, where they will be given the tools and knowledge they need to be successful in their new position with IDEA Public Schools. IDEA offers competitive pay based on experience. IDEA Public Schools also offers comprehensive benefits, including, but not limited to, health care, vision, and dental insurance, long-term and short-term disability, and a variety of other benefits. Employees will also receive feedback and coaching to help achieve goals, the release said. From the inside page of Monday, July 18th, Odessa American. Local news roundup. Robbery suspect arrested. A 32-year-old man who authorities say didn't show up to his arraignment on an aggravated robbery with a deadly weapon charge in February 2021 has been arrested. According to Ector County Sheriff's Office records, Eric Lopez was indicted last year on charges alleging he robbed a woman at gunpoint in April 2020. He was scheduled to be arraigned on May 26, 2021, but a warrant for his arrest was issued when he didn't show up. ECSO deputies arrested Lopez on Friday, and he is now being held in the Ector County Jail on $500,000 bail. Social Security Disability Medicare Enrollment Rules by Tony King. Dear Tony, my husband has met his 24th month of being on Social Security Disability, which qualifies him for Medicare. His disability is because of a severe case of Parkinson's. On August 1st, his Medicare Parts A and B will begin, but he is only 64. He will turn 65 next March, and I am not sure what he should do. With Paul's serious Parkinson's issues affecting his health, I am concerned with which Medicare option is for him to enroll in. Should he enroll in a Medicare Advantage plan or a Medicare supplement? I am concerned about whether he will enter the Medicare prescription drug donut hole because his Parkinson's medications are expensive. Please advise what we need to do to find what Paul's best Medicare option should be. Thanks, Cynthia from Dallas, Texas. Dear Cynthia, learning how to enroll in the right Medicare and Part D prescription drug plan when someone has a serious health condition can be extremely complicated. Your current specialists and prescriptions are what the Tony Says Medicare team focuses on for a Medicare consultation. What those on Social Security disability and qualifying for Medicare Parts A and B need to be aware of is that there are two Medicare enrollment times. Below are Medicare's two enrollment times for those on Social Security disability. 1. Enrolling in Medicare under 65. When one Social Security disability 24th month passes, the individual is automatically enrolled in Medicare to begin on the first day of the 25th month, such as your husband Paul's Medicare, even though he has not yet turned 65. In Texas, when one is under 65 and eligible for Medicare, there is only one Medicare supplement plan which you are eligible for, with most Medicare supplement insurance companies, and that plan is Plan A. Medicare Supplement Plan A works directly with Original Medicare and has more out-of-pocket than Medicare Supplement G. Different states have different Medicare supplement plans available to those under 65. When one is under 65 and enrolling in Medicare for the first time, a Tony Says Medicare team member will advise the new Medicare client to discuss which Medicare Advantage plan their medical professionals and facilities accept that can help to pick up their Medicare costs. Medicare Advantage plans help to cover the Medicare costs that Medicare does not pay for. The Medicare Advantage plan will have deductibles, copays, or maximum out-of-pocket costs that the Medicare enrollee will have to pay. When under 65, this may be an option to consider since Original Medicare has out-of-pocket. Always verify that your healthcare professionals and facilities accept and will bill the Medicare Advantage plan you've picked. 2. Turning 65 and on Social Security disability. Cynthia, I have good news for you, because when Paul turns 65 next March, he will have a second Medicare supplement enrollment period, which is called the Medigap Medicare Supplement Open Enrollment Period. He will not have to answer any health questions because he has turned 65, the same as anyone who is just turning 65 and has received both Medicare Parts A and B. Those on Social Security disability will qualify during a six-month period that begins the month one turns 65 for Medicare supplement plans A through N. Exploring the Medicare Part D prescription drug donut hole and Paul's prescription drug plan options are discovered during a Tony Says Medicare consultation. We always check prescriptions in Medicare.gov to determine which Medicare Part D plan best fits a client's needs. Confused about Medicare workshops, are taking a summer vacation and will return in the fall. Tony's Medicare Survival Guide Advanced Edition is available at www.tonysays.com. Have any Medicare questions? Please call 852-519-8664 or email info@tonysays.com. And now here are a couple of Texas and national stories from the Midland Reporter Telegram, published Saturday, July 16th. Texas is confident stressed grid will hold up amid heat, by Mark Chaddock, Bloomberg. The head of the Texas power grid remains confident the system will avoid widespread blackouts this summer, despite searing heat that's already pushed it to the brink. While temperatures have been higher than expected, Electric Reliability Council of Texas Interim Chief Executive Officer Brad Jones said grid operators have enough tools at their disposal to handle heat that's forecast to extend into next week. State lawmakers also gave ERCOT additional powers after the 2021 deadly winter blackouts that can help the grid manage through periods of tight supply, he said. I'm very confident that we can keep the lights on, Jones said in an interview Thursday. I know all of the people working on these issues. Unprecedented summertime electricity demand, coupled with an unrelenting heat wave, has strained the Texas grid and reignited questions over its readiness for extreme weather. The state has already seen 8 separate records for daily power use recently, and ERCOT has had to ask residents and businesses to conserve energy twice this week. The grid will be further tested in the days ahead, with high temperatures expected to remain. On Friday, Dallas is forecast to hit a high of 99 degrees Fahrenheit, and power demand is expected to be lower than it has for much of the past week. Energy use this summer has already surpassed ERCOT's anticipated peak, but Jones said the grid operator did consider scenarios where demand would be higher and is thus prepared for the heat. The grid operator also has new tools, including being able to make earlier pleas for energy conservation, as well as hastily deploying power reserves to help it cope with the high demand. Biden expects more Saudi oil after trip. By Grant Smith, Justin Sink, and Salma El-Wardani, Bloomberg. President Joe Biden said he expects further oil supply increases from Saudi Arabia to help tame fuel costs at home after a landmark meeting with the kingdom's rulers. Biden's trip didn't result in an immediate pledge for a production hike, but U.S. officials said they were confident that Riyadh would lead the OPEC Plus alliance to an agreement for a gradual boost. I'm doing all I can to increase the supply for the United States of America, which I expect to happen, Biden told reporters. The Saudis share that urgency, and based on our discussions today, I expect we'll see further steps in the coming weeks. Biden's meeting with King Salman bin Abdulaziz and his son, Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, in the port city of Jeddah, comes after high fuel prices compelled the president to backtrack on an earlier vow to isolate Riyadh over the 2018 killing of Washington Post columnist Jamal Khashoggi. Gasoline remains near record levels of $5 a gallon in the U.S., spurring discontent as midterm elections approach. His visit sets up the August 3rd meeting of the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries and its allies, which will calibrate output for September and beyond as the next significant date on the oil market calendar. Still, with oil prices tumbling from recent highs as recession risks grip markets, the picture could still change in the run-up. Adel Al-Jaber, Saudi Minister of State for Foreign Affairs, said supply decisions would be based on ongoing assessments of the market. He also stressed that Saudi Arabia would continue to work with OPEC Plus, the alliance involving Russia, whose oil revenues the U.S. is trying to squeeze because of its invasion of Ukraine. We assess demand and we work in consultations with other oil producers in OPEC and OPEC Plus to make sure that we have adequate supplies, the Saudi minister told a separate news conference. We base that on fundamentals, not on speculations, not on hysteria, not on geopolitics. Read, oil drops for second week as fears of recession magnify. The U.S. welcomed production hikes that had already been announced by the Saudis and other OPEC Plus members for this month and next. Saudi Arabia has committed to support global oil market balancing for sustained economic growth, the White House said in a statement. These steps and further steps that we anticipate over the coming weeks have and will help stabilize markets considerably. But any further increases are expected to be modest as the Persian Gulf heavyweights choose to preserve their remaining spare capacity amid supply disruptions ranging from Libyan unrest to sanctions against Russia. The buffer of the idle output has dwindled to razor-thin levels of just over 2 million barrels a day, according to the International Energy Agency. Under the terms of the existing OPEC Plus agreement, Saudi Arabia's production is due to reach almost 11 million barrels a day next month, a level it has only rarely maintained in its decades as a crude exporter. Any further increases would test the kingdom's maximum sustainability capacity, which state-run giant Saudi Aramco puts at 12 million barrels a day. Exports surge as world demands U.S. diesel, by Chunzi Zhu, Bloomberg. The U.S. is exporting diesel at the fastest ever rate as the global market's thirst for fuel remains insatiable. As much as 139 million barrels a day of diesel has left the U.S. Gulf Coast so far this month, around 10% higher than previous daily records for months set in July 2017, according to oil analytics firm Vortexa, which began trading the data in 2016. Adding gasoline, fuel exports out of the Gulf Coast topped 2 million barrels a day in the first half of July, also a record. Strong exports highlight just how much the world is still relying on the U.S. for the fuel that powers the global economies, farming, and industries. Gasoline is the top transportation fuel in the U.S., but not the rest of the world. And the effort to secure diesel is intensifying as demand continues to outstrip supply. The bulk of U.S. diesel exports are headed to Mexico, Brazil, Chile, and Argentina. Fuel crises have been unfolding in parts of Latin America, leading to violent protests and political upheaval. These countries have pulled a greater amount of diesel from the U.S. Gulf Coast in recent months. In addition to Latin America, the arbitrage for transatlantic diesel exports has also improved with a stronger European market and a drop in freight rates, spurring more shipments from the U.S. Gulf Coast to Europe. Global diesel strength is showing up in prices at the pump for U.S. drivers. The average retail diesel price has fallen 3.6% in the past month, compared with an 8.7% drop for gasoline, according to Auto Club AAA. Diesel strength is also underpinning the so-called 3-2-1 crack spread, a measure of refinery margins for turning crude oil into fuel, at above $44 a barrel as of Friday. That is one reason refineries are running at near-record rates in the U.S. at a time when domestic gasoline demand has softened. Gulf Coast refiners operated at 98.1% of capacity last week, the highest since December 2018, according to U.S. Energy Information Administration data. Blockbuster refining profits likely to dominate big oil's second quarter, by James Herron, Bloomberg. More evidence has emerged that big oil's second quarter will be dominated by blockbuster refining profits. Shell PLC already flagged last week a potential $1 billion gain from soaring margins at the unit that processes crude into fuels and chemicals. On Friday, Total Energy's SE said its refining business had an exceptional performance in the period. The French giant said that the variable cost margin for European refining, which represents the average earnings per barrel at its plants across the region, was a staggering $145.70 in the second quarter, more than three times higher than the prior period. A shortage of refining capacity, compounded by a reduction in exports of Russian oil products since the invasion of Ukraine, have pushed road fuel prices to record levels in many countries. The trend has been good for the oil majors after several tough years, but could backfire as rampant inflation forces central banks to raise interest rates and prompt some governments to consider windfall taxes. To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach. Concerned about platelet count. Dear Dr. Roach, I have a concern about my blood platelet count. It has always been low, but it seems to be declining. My doctor says it is not a concern. It was 125 in 2018 and has declined each year. It is now 76. What causes a low platelet, and is it a concern? Answer. There are three major blood cells: red blood cells, which carry oxygen; white blood cells, which fight off infection and tumors; and platelets, which are the first step in clotting blood. Low platelets have many possible causes. Platelets can clump, and giant platelets can fool the automated machine that reads platelets. Many drugs can lower platelets, and there is a distressingly large list of blood diseases, infections, and cancers that can cause it. The most common cause of persistent low platelets is an autoimmune disease called immune thrombocytopenia, ITP, which I suspect you have. A level of 75,000 platelets per microliter is below the level I am comfortable with. I suggest you visit a hematologist to be sure you have the common and usually benign condition of ITP and not something more concerning.
Husband and wife disrespect his parents without remorse. Dear Abby, I have two sons I'm very proud of. My husband and I have raised them to be respectful and to make responsible decisions. However, I go to bed in tears each night, feeling we have failed. Our elder son is married and has a son, our grandson, Charlie, who is dear to our hearts. Charlie is celebrating his second birthday, and our daughter-in-law told me they are having a birthday party for him, and we are invited. She added that she feels the secondary activities they are having are the ones that are the most important and ones he will remember. We are not invited to participate in the secondary activities, which include a hockey game, trip to the petting zoo, and family photos and videos. We try to support our son and daughter-in-law, but we do not feel respected and loved in return. When we invite them for dinner, they arrive an hour too late or don't show up at all. We send them text messages, but they don't respond. We offer to help and are there for them when they ask us to be, regardless of our personal consequence. What can we do? Signed, Overflowing with Love. Dear Overflowing, When I read your letter, your daughter-in-law told you that you weren't invited to the special events surrounding Charlie's birthday. My initial reaction was that she may have thought they would be too much for you or your husband to handle. However, when you described that your dinner invitations are treated like garbage and they don't have enough respect to return your calls and texts in a timely manner, it occurs to me that you have been overflowing with love that you have been taken for granted. You may have raised your son well, but your daughter-in-law appears to be running the show. Her parents may take precedence on the hierarchy of importance, and if that's the case, you and your husband need to clear the air with your son and his wife and sacrifice less when they snap their fingers. Dear Abby, I've been working with a therapist on creating healthy boundaries with my family. I moved out of state with my husband to ensure that those boundaries are met because my parents have alcohol and verbal abuse issues. My younger sister, Maya, became engaged recently, and she is a very exciting time in her life, planning her wedding. Here's the thing. I have no interest in hearing about, helping to plan, or being a part of the wedding because Maya and I have nothing in common other than our parents. She's self-absorbed and rude. Her fiancé is an introvert, so getting to know him is incredibly difficult. How do I politely convey this to Maya or, some more importantly, my mother without causing hurt feelings? Signed, Moved Away in the Midwest. Dear Moved, you may not be able to avoid hearing about the wedding if you are in communication with your mother and sister, but you have the advantage of living far away from them. If you are asked to assist in planning Maya's wedding, politely, logically, and regretfully, explain that your busy schedule as well as the geographic distance make your involvement impossible. You should, however, attend if you're invited.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.